This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 727, brought to you by Mac Weldon. For 20% off your first order, visit macweldon.com and enter promo code iFanboy on the website. And iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 727. I am Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host Josh Flanagan.
I will pick whatever I want.
There are no rules.
Pick. Nope.
You're all lucky that they've been comic books at this point.
It turns out, though, I have thousands of comic books, so this probably won't be a problem.
That's right. So we are a fanboy. Normally, we read our comics and we pick the best one and call it the Pick of the Week, but there aren't any new comics right now. And who knows when there will be on a regular basis. The news is constantly changing and we're not going to worry about it. We're just going to take it as it comes. When new comics are coming out again, then the show will start to revert back to normal. Until then, you get this hobble together mess.
No way. This is great. In the end, maybe we'll keep like, listen, we were going to go back to comics, but we got this whole cheese kick and our audience has tripled.
This Pick of the Week is Gouda. Here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. So I was thinking as I was reading, like in the back of my mind, talking to myself, like if I screw up the script, who cares?
It was a lot easier this week.
Who cares?
I'm not going to lie.
This week, Josh had the pick.
I did.
And I was happy to see, surprised, and excited to talk about it with you. Because I did mention this book briefly on one of our anniversary shows, like two shows ago, so like a year ago.
We're talking about Sarah by Garth Ennis and Steve Epting, with colored by Elizabeth Reitweiser from TKO Studios. You may remember, I honestly know they sent us all these, and I don't know if they did anything after this. Like, I don't know if there were other.
I believe there's a second wave of books.
So this was 2018, so not a ton of books then.
TKO Studios is trying to break the mold.
Yeah, so their deal was
new companies try to do when they come into the market.
Their deal was there's not a trade. They just sell you all six issues of the thing at once. They're oversized magazine size, like Golden Age size comics. They came in a little gift box,
Well, their thing was to do multiple forms. So like if you bought the box, which included the issues, I think they also sold them digitally. And then the trade ended up coming out like a year later or something like that. But their whole thing was drop the whole miniseries on you at once. So it's like you're getting the trade, but you're getting six issues.
I don't get it. I think, is this supposed to grow your audience? Because that feels like you just narrowed it. on.
I don't remember. It's been so long since they debuted, and I don't remember. It's not really that important. The point is, if you can buy the box with all six issues, you can buy a crate.
Yes.
It's available digitally. I read it on my. I have the box with the issues, but it's in storage, so I read it on Comixology this week. So, like, it's available wherever comics and however comics are sold.
But that all notwithstanding, the comics. I mean, I haven't gotten literally. They've been sitting on my desk for 2 years. I'm not even exaggerating. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna get to those. And so this was an excuse for me to finally read this Garth Ennis story that I have been wanting to read. And it's top shelf stuff. Production, the magazine size is.
It looks gorgeous.
Like,
yeah.
Oh man, I was really glad to be reading it on. Not only paper, but oversized paper and a really nice, you know, just a beautiful production, you know, and not on an iPad. And there's nothing wrong with reading on iPads. We do it all the time. I don't feel like it takes away from it, but it was fun to read this in sort of this slightly bigger format.
Well,
for
also,
sure.
We've been talking for years. We make jokes about Garth Ennis with his tin cup peddling to whatever comic company will publish his World War II comics. And it's
damn right.
I was trying to remember beforehand. So it's like Vertigo, DC. He's done War Comics at Marvel, Dynamite. Avatar.
Yep.
Are we missing any?
TKO.
Well, not TKO. I mean, the difference here is that they got him a top flight artist, and that's been the sort of the knock on his especially his Avatar stuff. So the art wasn't always professional, but
sure.
I don't think we've seen an artist of Epting's quality doing his stories outside of the Marvel stuff, which is tangentially war stuff and usually, you know, tied in somehow with either Punisher or Nick Fury, but his straight up, you know, biographical historical war comics. We haven't seen an artist of this quality in I don't even know if I want to say 10 years.
Well, I am going to be saying something slightly controversial about that.
Interesting.
Yeah. Let's talk about the story, what it is. He has been Garth Ennis over the past decade or so plus. He's been very interested on the Eastern Front. We spent a lot of time in the war stories books and everything with
Night Witches.
Yeah, so those are female Russian pilots. We spent time with German tankies on both sides of the conflict. For some reason, you know, like I think he I don't know if he got it out of himself to sort of get all the Brit stories out of the way, and now he's like, well, let's spend time with, you know, with the Germans and with the Russians and the stuff that we don't think of on you know, we don't. Think
the
about
meat,
that so
the
much
meat grinder side.
Yeah, for the American point of view is definitely not sort of skewed to that, and it's, you know, it's very interesting because you've taken that perspective out of it. You've got sort of the German culture hitting the Russian culture, and the Russian culture in that war is really fascinating. Actually, what I think was one of the it's a group of female snipers it's probably 1940-41. Trying to think of when they launched. 40. So this is late 40, and this is a little later. So the Germans have been well within Russia at this point. So 41.
They talk about it. They've been winning, and
yeah,
despite what
Germans.
The Germans have been winning the war. Of course, they'd only gone through one winter at that point, so they're about to hit the wall. But at this point, the Germans
that's 41.
Yeah, the Germans are barreling through Western Russia at this point in the war.
I'm holding on with all of my teeth not to explain all of this. And I'm
just not do it.
Oh, but I just read the book about the Blitz. And anyway, because Hitler, he would have anyway.
So this is not so a group of seven female snipers within this division of troops. It's similarly set up kind of like the Night Witches, which was about a group of female pilots. So here it's a group of seven snipers, and the main character being Sarah, who is the best one of them
by far.
But I, as you mentioned, I think one of the it's basically a story of survival. It's a six issue story. You know, they're coming up against they're constantly going out in the day, you know, setting up, shooting Germans, going home, and then there's a bunch of conflicts that happen. But really, well, as interesting as that is the propaganda side, as you're talking about the culture of the Russian army,
yeah,
in which they had to basically fight their own propaganda officers who were constantly telling them everything was great and they're heroes of the motherland. And while they know the truth and they can't really speak it out loud because then they'll get sent away to a camp of their own. That's the real interesting gray area of the Russian army, is that they had elements of of the Nazism in them. And
and I don't think he's touched that in some of the other stories he's done. There's definitely the, I don't know, it's the information officer, the government, I forget what it's called, but basically the precursor of the KGB.
NKVD.
Whose name, you know, they would have troops stationed with everybody. And the Germans had them, called them loyalty officers, the same sort of thing. And, you know, their job was to be pro-government. You know, if you watched Chernobyl, you saw some of this for sure. And Sarah is the one who keeps, you know, she sees through it. Like, she's their most valuable soldier, but also, like, she understands the bullshit of it. And then by the end of the book, there's no need for me to spoil this. You find out she really understands it, and it's sort of what's behind, you know, everything she's saying. And so any of that doubt that you had sort of goes completely away. So I thought that that was really interesting, because a lot of the stories haven't focused on sort of, you know, the soldiers are one thing, but the government in Russia at that time was doing a lot of shitty things. And they really, you know, they described it as the meat grinder. Basically, we didn't have a lot except for a lot of people. So they just threw as many people as the Germans as they can, which eventually worked for them.
Yeah, the technology was worse. You know, there's a scene here where they get attacked by the Germans, and they've got Tigers, and their shells are bouncing off the hulls of the Tigers. And they just weren't as well, you know, well equipped. So All they had to do was just sort of choke the Nazis in blood.
Yeah, basically. Their tanks were garbage. You know, these guys, you know, they all have bolt action rifles. They're not, you know, they work. They're real good for sniping. But then the other side of it was, this is fairly technical from a war standpoint. There's a bit, I want to say it was in issue 4 or 5. I think it was 5, where basically the deal is that it has come back to the Germans that there is a woman or a group of women who is real badass. And so they send out their most badass sniper. And it's sort of like, what was the movie?
There's been a couple of movies like that. That's a very
the one with Jude Law.
There's the Jude Law Ed Harris one. There was the movie Sniper with Tom Berenger. Same story, you know, one badass sniper against another. It's like a boxing movie with rifles, but.
So they send them out there. And then basically at the beginning, Sarah explains where everybody is and why they're there. Around this big field, and who can see what, and what the other side is doing.
In this book.
Yeah, and what's funny is that I read through it and I was confused. I was lost, and I was like, "Did they screw up?" And I went back and I read it again very carefully, and I deduced that no, it was done. It was done and explained perfectly. But the only thing about it was that they had intercut the scenes in the field with the scenes from back at the camp, mm-hmm. and that made it a little harder to follow.
Yeah.
So I basically just skipped all – I'd read it once all the way through, and I skipped all the camp stuff, and it was clear as day. And also it was like – I was like, that was an amazing bit of comic book storytelling when I was really able to pay attention to it. But it really forced your attention in a way that doesn't normally. There's another thing that I noticed. I've said, you know, if you listen to this, you probably know that I consider Garth Ennis to be my favorite comic book writer and have for some time. You never, when you're reading a Garth Ennis comic, kind of regardless of what it is, I'm not to say they're breezy, but you never feel bogged down. You are moving all the time. You feel like you're done with them before you want to be, and not in a bad way. You're just like, oh man, that was good. And, you know, he is from that class where he had to come up, you know, he's known for these really long stories, but he had to come up in issue writing. So he writes a damn fine issue, you know, cliffhangers and whatnot. And each issue has its own story, even though they all get pieced together as one big thing. And I just like reading through the 6 of these, I forced myself to not go too fast because I could have.
Yeah, it's a quick read, and I mean it's which is
but not to say a light read.
No, and not to say you feel like you didn't get your money's worth. You definitely do, but it does. It also moves quickly, so you're not like, how long have I been reading this? How many do I have left? It's just like
there's never that wall of text page. It's movement, and it's, you know, the people are in, you know, he's great with characters, which is even more impressive when you think of how many of these World War II stories he's done. You know, another soldier in the field, and he makes them all into something. All 7 women on this team, who I did have trouble figuring who their names were. Till the end, I was like, okay, I know who everybody is now. You know, they all have a personality, and I like the comradeship between Sarah and I think it's Rini, who's sort of the squad commander.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. You know, they get in a fight at one point, but then they sort of talk it out after that in a really sort of grown up, interesting way. You know, all those relationships were great.
The new sniper, you had the sort of psychopath sniper. Like, they all had a different story. I mean, obviously with Sarah, you get a ton of backstory and her motivation and everything. So, but the rest of them, you have to sort of get by implication. But
yeah,
he's just so good. There's so many sort of master class pages, not just issues and arcs, mm-hmm. but just pages and progressions within a page. There's one page that I put up on Instagram where they're eating. The Russians had captured two German prisoners, and the girls are all eating. And I'm trying to find the page so I can get the dialogue right, but it's like, was that a shot? Oh, that was two shots. And then while they're saying that, the camera's panning, mm-hmm. pulling away from the table. And yeah. It's just a great progression. The rhythm of the dialogue, the art, the shadows. It's just a because it's a grisly notion, but you know they're eating dinner.
So here is my controversial statement, and I will preface this by saying this has nothing to do with the ability of Steve Epting, who is excellent and unparalleled. And there, you're right. There's a lot of very excellent technical storytelling. That scene I was talking about in the fifth issue, where you know, like the big fight goes down, basically, was a really good example of that. And I sort of read it, and I, you know, and the stuff in the bunks I thought was also really well done too. However, I am often I find that my favorite stuff with Garth Ennis tends to be the guys who are a little more cartoony, who are a little more expressive. I was thinking about this for a good, like, from the time that I read it up until now. So I've put as much time in as is possible. I ignored my children to think about this.
Sure.
Just so you know, you're getting your money's worth.
Any excuse.
Yeah, sure.
I gotta think about Garth Ennis.
Garth,
leave me alone.
Surely you understand. I know you're hungry, but listen. Because of the way that Garth Ennis writes, which is relatively spare, he doesn't give you a lot as a reader if he's not expecting you to pay attention, if that makes sense. Like, there's really – like, there's a lot of things that are sort of taken for granted that the reader understands, and he doesn't explain everything to you. And this is probably one of the reasons I really like the way that he writes. However, I feel that when he has a slightly more cartoony, and by that I mean expressive artist, they tend to put a little more into the characterizations of things that can happen. Whereas Steve Epting's strength seems to tend to be the storytelling, the figure work, where a lot of the faces of the characters are pretty flat and straight. So there's not extra going in there that I'm used to seeing from Garth Ennis artists, if that makes sense.
I thought that might be a choice because these women are dead. At least Sarah's dead inside.
Yeah.
Her eyes are dead. Like, and I think that's especially for her. I mean, obviously it's not all the characters, but I think the whole point of her is she is dead inside. And I think for her being drawn blankly, I think is a choice. Because I think some of the other characters are a bit more expressive. Sure. The psychopath is a bit more expressive. But you're right. I mean, there are also Russians on the front in the winter in the snow, and I don't know how goofy. You know, I'm thinking more of like his tanky stuff, and there's always like there's no funny character in here. You know, there's no silly guy,
right.
And so I wonder if that's a specific
Maybe
choice
the
with the picking the artist to. I don't know. I thought this looked great, though. I think, and the bright white colors are terrific.
Absolutely, I think you might be right because this is a story that probably wouldn't lend itself to that. But I think I am used to that a little bit with Ennis, and maybe that's. I don't know. I don't know now if that's the artist or the story. I think it's a combination of the two. But this is very dry is not the word I'm looking for because that indicates bad. But it's you know, it's pretty straight up. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty like if you were saying it was sci-fi, it'd be hard sci-fi. This is kind of hard history in that sense, I think. And that might be the deal. Also, without giving away the ending or anything, but it's a very Russia in winter war ending. Like I was like, oh, yeah. That I guess that there was no other way that could go.
It's not uplifting, although very satisfying.
True.
And it's a really great character. I mean, her name is in the titles. It's about Sarah, but it's a really great character piece about her. And as you said, each issue is its own different story. Like stories really don't continue from issue to issue. Like, well, this issue is about this and this thing that happens. This issue is about the sniper that they fight. This issue is about her flashbacking. So, but through that all, you get an overall story of however long this takes place, and it's rough, but it's good.
Yeah, no, you know, at the same time, like I was like, that was literally as triumphal as you could make something. I think
so. There's only one real criticism I have of the book.
I would love to hear it,
and it's one I remember having at the time, and I had it again reading it. So The only thing that you have to kind of like let go for purposes of dramatic storytelling and not think too hard about is when Sarah captures that German soldier and then ends up trussing him up in a tree to make him look like a sniper.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how she could possibly have done that.
Oh, I didn't even think. You know what I didn't? What I thought about that was, and I read. There was another scene that I had to read over and over a couple times. Is that she? The Germans and the Russians wear kind of the same white.
Yeah, they all wear the white
togs. Winter. And so you kind of you have to look at like, oh, those are German helmets, so you can kind of get it. So she gets up early in the morning, and sneaks into a camp, and it looks like she's sneaking away from her own camp, but. Then she sneaks up on this one German dude, and she looks like she's standing in the middle of the camp without cover. And there's other soldiers all over the place.
Well, look into that in one second. So what I'm saying is I have a hard time believing this soldier just allows her to get up in the tree and sit there while she intricately ties him to the tree. That's the only –
That's true.
Thing I had to think of.
That's fine, but I'm agreeing with that. But I'm saying the earlier part of that, her getting into and out of that camp seemed very unlikely.
So for your saying, I think was when she come across the guy peeing. Was that the one?
No, he's unloading box. Oh, I guess he is. Is he peeing? No.
Issue three? Is that what you're talking about?
So there's three of them. He walks away whistling. He's unloading the truck, and she comes up on him.
Talking about the same issue. I thought you were talking about issue three. I see. Okay.
No. Issue six. Same guy you're talking about. Okay, the one that she puts in the tree.
Yeah.
And he's got a crate of stuff. And she pretty much seems to be standing in the camp because the opposite view of where he is, there's people everywhere.
Yeah, the pages before that, she's sort of pulling a Captain Spears and just running through their camp.
Yeah, and I just didn't – I was like, I don't see how – because all that guy need to do is yelp. That's literally it, and she's dead.
So what we've established is he's the worst soldier that's ever soldiered in any war.
And they did – yeah, and they did say that, and I think that answers both your question and my question, but that was a little bit of a stretch.
Anyway, for dramatic purposes, it worked. It's just – if you thought about it for me, I was like, isn't he a fighter? Like
– I saw that. I see what you mean. I didn't think of what you thought of, but –
That's all right. Anyway, I'm glad you picked this because I really did enjoy it at the time, reading it however long, a year ago, and I knew you would enjoy it, just a matter of you having an excuse to read it, and the excuse being there are no comics.
Yeah, I think sometimes I can't think of a lot of Garth Ennis things that I've disappointed in, but I will sit on them for a long time because – you know, A, I'm like, I don't want to read the one I don't like. Mm-hmm. And B, when I do like it, I'm going to like it just as much, if not more, because I waited. So, I have a bunch of Garth Ennis trades and things that I've never read that are here, you know, that I'm, you know, I'm going to get to them one day. I'm going to be thrilled. I remember when I read, the Authority Kev stories.
Yeah.
And I went through them all at one point, and I thought, you know, when I read about it, I thought, I'm not going to like this. And then once I started going, I was like, nope, these are also great. You know, and it's so, you know, they're good for whenever you get there.
I mean, they're not all, I think I just read one that I didn't like, but I can't think of what it was. I've been blowing through my 2-read stack.
But those, he did a couple for Marvel, was like the Enemy Ace or whatever. They weren't great.
I can look at. Let me see.
I think one was a pick of the week, but still.
I like, but there was a couple that he did for Image.
Oh, really?
That because I was just blowing through a bunch. I had like a ton of Image books in my 2-read stack.
Did you ever read Tales from the Rifle Brigade?
That might have been the one I'm thinking of.
See, that was a very silly, like farcical kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
I really like those. Those are the ones
I really liked it at the time. Those were Vertigo originally.
Yeah, Tales of the Rifle Brigade. I read that trade recently. Mm-hmm. I did not enjoy that. I had to really force myself to finish that one.
Yeah, I liked it at the time, but that was a long time ago that I read that.
And I read Bloody Mary. I didn't like that one either.
Uh-huh.
But this is from like, you know, not everyone writes everything perfectly.
No, totally.
Or for me. But anyway, I love this. I'm glad you picked it.
Yeah, I loved it too. It was great.
And so last week when we talked about Teen Titans Go to Camp, we said we were going to stop talking about Teen Titans Go to Camp unless there was a reason to talk about it. This is issue 8, and the digital issue 8, and I wanted to talk about it because Emma Kubert drew it. And
yeah.
She is the granddaughter of Joe Kubert and the daughter of Andy Kubert. And so they are kind of like, you know, comics royalty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are the what's like, I'm trying to think of a Hollywood family like that.
I was like the Buscemas.
No, like, oh God.
Wait. So is this, like Andy or Adam's daughter?
Daughter.
Andy. Okay.
Adam's daughter is the editor, Katie Kubert.
Right. Okay.
So they are a comics family. And I thought this was really fun because her style is not at all like either of her family styles, but you can also kind of see a little bit of stuff in there. Yep. I liked looking at it.
Something about the production was really weird. Like there's bits where it looks, I think I said this about one of the ones before.
The Barrymores. Like, that's what I was thinking of.
There you go. That's a good one.
So she's the Drew Barrymore.
The Fondas.
Yeah.
It just looks like digital stuff has been zoomed in too much a lot of places, and I don't understand.
I can see that. And also, if you know, we talked about it before, this is half a page, right? So it is sort of double sized.
I know, but like it's possible to do this without, like, if you, the lettering is tight, so like the lines on the other stuff, it seems weird.
I mean, who knows who's actually putting these books together right now?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good. The I will say the coloring is not good.
It's that the guy who couldn't get out of the office before the lockdown who has to live there.
Actually, she did the coloring too. So
I like the ongoing feud with Speedy.
It's delightful.
In this issue, how he's trying to romance Starfire, but Dick keeps fucking it up, and Speedy keeps showing up to serenade her or bring her the proper flowers or have a romantic date on the lake. I liked looking at it. I liked that it was Emma Kubert this was basically all about their feud. It was fun.
Yeah. I think the storytelling was very strong, as well it fucking well should be. And I actually did like the character designs that are sort of like notched one step closer to reality, but still remind you of the cartoons, I guess.
Yeah. And it's Dick, you know, Robin's hair looks like he just stuck his finger in a light socket.
Yeah. I'm all right with that. I think the best bit is when whatever the big monster is that comes out of the flowers puts its head over or eats Robin's head, and those are great panels. That's what I'm saying. Let's go over to Gotham.
Batman the Adventure Continues number 2. So the adventures continue. So we talked about issue 1, and that was with this is by Alan Burnett and Paul Dini, with art by Ty Templeton, Monica Kubina, and Joshua Reed. So this is like very Silver Agey. You know, there's big robots, and Lex Luthor's in his battle suit. And it's fun. It's not great, but it's fun. I enjoyed, I think the best part of this was the Superman reveal.
Yes. I mean, that's always fun to see. I want to know how he did that, but either way.
Yeah, it's sort of like the soldier in the tree. It's like somehow Lex Luthor subdued Superman and turned him into a power battery for a giant robot. Okay. And also, these are moving too, so like we're done now with Lex. Lex Luthor story's over. So
right.
Now we're moving on to Jason Todd.
That is Jason Todd. Because you see, at the end I saw, I was like, is that Jason Todd? And then it says Deathstroke comes to Gotham. And I thought, well, what is that?
It's not a great comic. It's a good comic. The books that they did in the 90s that were contemporaneous with the show were actually really great comics. Mm-hmm. And if you recall, they did it with Superman, and Mark Miller was one of the writers on it. Like those were back then, those animated books were really actually legitimately great. This is good.
Well, I know of Ty Templeton as a cartoonist who I really like, and when I see his name, I get excited. But there were a couple bits in here where I was like, are you trying to be simplistic?
Yeah, I just had that feeling.
Let's see. There's one, which is page 20. It's Superman is sort of floating in the air, and like, it's just bad figure. Like, it's not good. Then there's another one where Batman is flying off in his robot suit, and which is page 13. And like, it's just like, it's wrong. Like, it's not drawn correctly, which is odd because it's kind of almost the same pose as from the other page.
Yeah, it's a bummer because it's it almost feels like it's not. It feels like the story and the art are a little simple, which would mean
it's
geared more towards kids than all ages.
Which I'm fine with, but that's not okay to do with art, and certainly not with production of art.
Yeah.
I don't think. I mean, if you're going to do the figure drawing, you got to do the figure drawing. And I know this artist has the stuff. This feels like they took like storyboards or something and then kind of gussied them up for print, but didn't really. I don't know. It was that was a little weird to me. I absolutely enjoyed reading it. I mean, you think you'd said it before, like you can hear that Lex Luthor voice. Mm-hmm. You know, you can. Whereas I haven't watched that show in forever, but I'm intimately familiar with what it looks and sounds and feels like. And this does give you that feeling, which is fun.
So we had a nice surprise this week with Panel Syndicate releasing a new book, which was nice of them because there was no comics.
That would have been the thing I should have put in the script right there that I was thinking of that I forgot to do.
Friday from Ed Brubaker, Marcos Martin, Munza Vicente. Marcos Martin and Munza Vicente are the art team. They did Barrier and The Private Eye. And this is Ed Brubaker's first Panel Syndicate book. And he seems like the perfect guy to work with this company because this is totally his ethos. And so I want to know if you, and you may not have had the same thought I did because you may not have done the same things I did when I was a kid, but I was only about 10 pages, not even 10 pages in when I realized it was Encyclopedia Brown.
I didn't realize it until I was actually like, what is this? I spent a lot of time with that. And then when I read it at the end, what was it? Harriet the Spy was, I think, the thing that he said was his favorite thing. And then that's what it was. And I sort of understood it, but I didn't get it right away for sure.
Yeah, I was like, what is this? And then I don't know why, because, you know, I haven't read Encyclopedia Brown in like 30 years, but in my brain, it sort of all clicked because you've got this kid who's working with the sheriff and he's got a tough female Watson. Mm-hmm. And that was Encyclopedia Brown's setup. And there was a bully in town who was always the bad guy, and he had a name very similar to the bad guy they were chasing in this. Anyway, this is a story of a girl who comes back from college. She has she's very angsty about it because she has a best friend and she's got something to talk to him about, something that happened before they left. And she wants to talk to him, but she doesn't get a chance because as soon as she gets home from the train station, the cop car pulls up and says, we have a mystery to solve. And so she gets pulled into this mystery that is very supernatural and all that stuff. But not what I was expecting.
No, it was not. It was not a Brubaker it was Brubaker, but it wasn't what I thought it was.
It's the Fatale Brubaker.
It's also like you remember there was a criminal series or a story where it was Archie. Basically.
Oh yeah, no, but that was more straightforward. This is the supernatural side. It's the Fatale side. The guy who likes Cthulhu, however you say that. So that's less interesting to me. But
and it wasn't a Marcos Martin that I could have told you.
No, especially after reading Batgirl last week.
It was very different
Marcos Martin than even Private Eye Marcos Martin.
Yeah, no, it was he was doing a completely different cartoon style that, you know, the storytelling things, and obviously there's production coloring that's sort of like you can see it, but the sort of way that he drew the, you know, the figures, Christ, some of it looks like old Top Shelf comics almost, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's
that
really kind. It's very cartoony with very exaggerated features on people. And when I opened it, I was like, is this really Marcos Martin? And then you can see it. You can see it, but he's doing a different thing here. So Brubaker said in the outgoing essay that his idea was to do the YA book after their adults.
Post-YA.
Yeah. The joke being that's just A. But so this is like Encyclopedia Brown character that's also Harriet, elements of other things. What happens when they're older? And they're past the point of being, you know, kids. And so, you know, it's very adult. There's cursing and there's violence. And
she smokes.
You have to assume they either had sex or something happened that was very awkward before she left. And so there's that. And the kid, I'm just going to keep calling Encyclopedia Brown because I don't know what his name was, is still living in that world. He's still home. He's still solving cases with the sheriff. And she is trying to sort of grow up a little bit.
Lancelot Jones.
Right. I think when I read that and saw the setup, my brain clicked into place at it. That's
Sure.
I read a lot of Encyclopedia Brown as a kid.
I loved it at the time, but I haven't looked at it in a while. I think I tried to read some of it to my older son. He just didn't click, and we didn't keep going.
He very obviously knew the answer to the mystery. That's why.
Yeah, probably.
I enjoyed it, but I was like, wow, that was unusual.
I really liked that it existed this week. I was very happy about that. Uh-huh. I didn't love it though. It really didn't speak to me in a lot of ways that I was I was excited about. When I started, I was very excited. I was like, all right, I get to read this. This is going to be great. And there was nothing wrong with it. It just wasn't a thing that tickled my fancy so much. Well,
that's how I felt about Barrier, which was the second book that Branca Vaughn did with Marcus Martin from Pinal Syndicate. Like, I don't think I even finished it.
I feel like maybe I read the first one for the show, so,
I mean, first of all, I think it's kind of fun to not know anything about these books. They just sort of drop. All you had was the cover image and the creative team. So I was opening it. I was like, I don't even know what I'm in for. So that was kind of exciting. But then
that's always fun.
I was like, I don't even, it was fine. Like, I liked it. It was okay. And at first I was worried, like, oh no. Because you had chosen Sarah, you know, early enough for us to read it as Pick of the Week. And I was like, oh no, did we blow it? Like, is this going to be this incredible Brubaker Martin crime book that should have been the pick? And then I was like, nope, Sarah was better.
There was no.
I mean, look, I liked it. I'm going to read the next issue. I'm going to keep reading it, but it's not.
Well, I've got to read the next issue. I mean, shit.
It's not my favorite. I dropped off Fatale. You know, we get the sort of ghost hunter-y stuff is not as interesting to me.
No, I mean, neither of us are big supernatural guys. So, you know what I'm big into?
Underwear.
Not just underwear, my friend.
Socks,
I'm into
hoodies, sweatshirts,
all those things. Okay. I'm into smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping.
Right.
I'm into Mac Weldon. Unlike the Panel Syndicate books, when Mac Weldon comes along, I do know what I'm going to get. And I'm pretty excited about that because they're into the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and more that you will ever wear. And my experience holds that sentence up. I can proudly proclaim that is true. There's the silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial. Mm-hmm. And also, this is, if you don't like it, you don't have to send it back. You keep it. They'll send you the money back and you're it. No questions asked. I can't imagine that would happen because it's damn fine stuff.
Right.
They look good. They perform well. It's good for working out, going to work, going on dates, or things that we used to do.
Right. When you get to go out again.
Don't tell me that you're not giving your Ace sweatpants a workout.
I was literally wearing them up until an hour ago.
Yeah.
Because it was chilly here in LA. It was 60.
I was like, do you get dressed for the show now?
Well,
your dress pants.
The sun finally came out, so I put on shorts. But it was cool this morning. It was no sun. It was 60. So I was like, ooh, it's sweatpants weather. So I put on my sweatpants.
I believe there's an Ace short.
Ooh.
So listen, they value their loyal customers, and they have now created a loyalty program, the Weldon Blue loyalty program. And here's the deal. You create a free account. That's free. You don't have to subscribe. Level one, you place an order for any amount, and you never pay for shipping again. So you sign up, place one order, and you never pay for shipping again. That's excellent. Level two, once you purchase $200 worth of products from Mac Weldon, that's in aggregate. Not only will you receive free shipping going forward, but you will start saving 20% on every order you make for the next year. I think that's pretty rad.
Yeah.
Level two also grants access to new products before they're released to anybody else, as well as free gifts added to future orders. That sounds pretty good. If you are listening to this and you have ever gone and bought any of that stuff based on our recommendation or used our coupon code or whatever, then you are right now thinking, you know, that's not a bad deal. That's all right. And you should take
that
on. That's
the David Letterman dumb guy voice.
I know. I've been doing it for years, and that's the first time that you've mentioned it. I've been doing the David Letterman dumb guy voice since I was 11.
Who hasn't?
I know. I used to always refer to everybody as kids. I'd be like, you know, kids. And people, I remember people in college would be like, why do you keep calling us that?
I'm from Boston.
Yeah. There you go. So that's all worth it. That's good. Connor and I have purchased and worn many of these items. We've talked about them in the past. We're big fans.
We avail ourselves of the product.
Oh my God. I can't. I'm not kidding you. As of this morning, I was like, all right, I have lots of these clean Mac Weldon underwear ready. So I'm starting my day in the right direction. I'm pretty happy about that. And those are my favorite out of all of them. Like, you just can't go wrong. It's damn fine underwear. That's just all there is to it. If you like a boxer brief, man, and you've been looking for the right one, my search ended. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So get over to MacWeldon.com. You can use the coupon code iFanboy for 20% off your first purchase. And like they said, you order that, join the program first. Join the loyalty program first. Then all your shipping is free after that forever. And then you spend a little more money, you're getting a discount for the next year. That's fantastic. Get on that stuff, especially now. Jeez, be comfortable. If you can, if you've got the, you're like, you know what, I need some more stuff. You want to, if you're going to have to sit around the house forever, you know, do it right. Make sure you have the support you need. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Both literally and figuratively.
Exactly. Let's go to our corner and bring in our esteemed, special corner.
Esteemed colleague,
that was it.
Our esteemed colleague, Ron Richards.
Hello, sir. How are you doing?
Hey, here he is.
There he is.
He's here to talk about G.I. Joe.
Oh, am I here to talk about G.I. Joe?
So welcome to G.I. Joe Corner. We're back.
This is the highlight of your week, right?
It really is. It really, yeah. really is. And it was funny because, you know I missed last week. We're on episode 3, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, cool. So I missed last week with episode 2. And I was like, well, maybe I have some time to talk about episode 2. And then I watched episode 3. And gentlemen, there is a lot to unpack in this episode.
Oh yeah.
Like there is a lot.
All right, so let's start with the stats just to get them out of the way. So this is episode 3. This is called The Worms of Death, The Mass Device Part 3. And it aired, Josh can tell us because I clicked away.
September 14th, 1983.
Yep.
Correct.
As always, Dan Thompson directed, written by Ron Friedman, produced it for Marvel Productions.
I thought it might be helpful to just read the description from Wikipedia.
Sure.
Because I think that will also give an indication on how much there is to unpack here. The Joes and Cobra vie to find the heavy water element. Mysterious underwater tube worms cause both teams to agree to a ceasefire to thwart off the worms, allowing both teams to successfully recover the heavy water.
Wait, thwart off?
Thwart off.
That's not right.
Snake Eyes struggles to remain alive in a snowstorm and is suffering from radioactive poisoning. He manages to save a wolf who becomes his makeshift pet. The pair are rescued by
That's
a blind.
That's not the right
Timber
word.
Timber is no
Hang
one's
on.
Pet.
Hang on. The pair are rescued by a blind hermit who cures Snake Eyes of his poisoning and injuries. The Joes are overjoyed to see their comrade alive and with the crystals. However, his canister was booby-trapped by Cobra, causing poison gas to flood the air. So that's all Wikipedia says, and it mentions nothing about Life of the Party Torpedo.
Well,
I have never seen a Joe get more applauded upon entering the scene than when Torpedo emerged out of the submarine and everyone lost their shit.
They love Torpedo.
They love Torpedo.
That guy would always bring weed from Hawaii. They loved him.
They're like, ah, it's Torpedo.
I fucking love that guy. Two things. Just before we get into the main thing. One, the point is, earlier today, I was standing in front of my refrigerator, and for some reason, I said, Cobra! I don't know why. It literally came out of me. I had no reason, and obviously this is getting to me. Number two,
I will add to that. I was watching this while making dinner, and my wife stopped in the kitchen and like looked at the screen for a couple of seconds and was like, it must have been really fun to do that voice recording for Cobra Commander, and just walked away.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Part two is that it's amazing that we know any science at all to this day, because the people who did the show either did not know or did not care. Because
I don't know
there
why,
were so many inaccuracies.
Why didn't we tell Russia and Chernobyl about the leaves and herbs you could just mix together and just make radiation just disappear? Leave your body and apparently your clothes, because he puts the clothes back on.
You're all dead.
The blind hermit was so funny. And
what was his accent?
He was an Irishman. Yeah, it was very bad. But what's so funny is that, like, so Snake Eyes is wandering the tundra glowing with radiation, just glowing. And he stops to save a wolf from a trap who then follows him. Then the blind hermit finds them and then goes, oh, we need a name for your dog. Let's call him Timber. And then Snake Eyes leaves with Timber. How did anyone ever learn Timber's name after that? Because Snake Eyes didn't tell anybody.
You could have written it down. Maybe you got a little tag. put a little tagger on it.
Also, why was the hermit an Irishman?
Listen.
Because he was driven out of New York in the 1860s.
When did Cobra have time to booby trap the canister?
Right.
Because that was
a good point.
The G.I. Joe canister, wasn't
it?
Yeah. And then he walked out and then... I thought very humanely the Cobra soldiers just let him walk into the snow to die instead of killing him because he was.
Well, maybe that's because they knew they booby trapped the canister.
But when did they do that?
I don't know.
Major Blood was like, well, he's not getting anywhere. That didn't seem like a faint. That wasn't like to fool Snake Eyes.
Right. I thought he was going to die in the snow.
Maybe the Irish Arctic vagrant was Cobra.
Maybe. Oh, maybe he was. He could have been Baroness in costume.
I think that makes
sense. Speaking of Baroness, we still haven't seen her in her full leather S&M getup yet. We still have original Baroness blue uniform.
Or a red scuba outfit, which, by the way, lots of conversations happening underwater.
Yeah.
I mean, like where do you start with the underwater scene? For one, instant sense memory when those worms popped out and made that sound.
Oh, God, it was horrifying.
Yes, from a production standpoint, that is the scariest sound I've ever heard. It would like, way to go.
That is the audio version of Rebar. Oh, my God.
I can't imagine as a kid. I don't remember watching this particular one. At least that scene. I remember watching other scenes. But, man, that sound, even as an adult, I was like, oh, God.
I still, every time I watch any underwater documentary and they start talking about the tube worms, I get anxious and I don't know why. Now I remember. Like, they're genuinely scary.
But here's the thing. If you just let them float to the top, they'll explode.
But apparently, they talked about the pressure. Yeah. But then they got out. And swam around with exposed hands and faces. And if you're going to mention, that you're in the deepest trench in the ocean, that the water pressure down there is what creates heavy water, which literally less believable than what happened in the Flash story. Because it's less true. And then they're talking, they're swimming around. I was like, this is not, your hands wouldn't be able to be out.
Even in like 3 feet of water, you can't hear each other that far across the distance, across a chasm, to have a conversation about your truce. Like
that, I assume they had radios
on the same frequency as Cobra.
That's a thing that you do in cartoon warfare. Is everybody's on the same frequency?
And they all speak English, so there you go.
Otherwise the plot grinds to a halt.
True. I did enjoy in Cobra's headquarters as they were, making Russia bow to its knees and then threatening to, destroy New York. At one point, after one of those bizarre broadcasts, Cobra Commander just turned to Destro and just went, "Cobra rules."
You know, my favorite part of that scene is the in-house Cobra TV crew.
Yes.
The two guys who have to work the giant broadcast.
I'm honestly surprised they never sold those as figures.
The platform,
the camera operator, sound guy.
What about when after they went for the hard water and Duke gets on the phone and video chats with the professor back at base, and did you notice he's holding the phone at least 6 inches away from his ear? It was so bizarre.
But back to the Cobra broadcast. I realized in this, I feel like in this episode they changed what the mass device does, because originally it was teleporting objects, and then all of a sudden it's disintegrating them.
Well, it said it disintegrated the
Eiffel Tower.
Right.
And also, they showed the boxes. Of elements that they desperately needed because they didn't have enough to do anything, and they were all full.
Yeah, I noticed that as well.
Here's another bit in terms of science. So is it Steeler and who are the other guys who sort of build a rocket?
They build a satellite that takes off by itself.
Right, so it was its own rocket, so it could break the gravitational field from the middle of their base. They'll open the roof up, send that up there. none of that is even close to real. And then Cobra goes and they put a bunch of dudes up there
in space
who apparently will die there. They've left them no way to get home. I mean, that's a tough job.
How dedicated the Cobra soldier is.
I did do a double take when they teleported the Cobra soldiers into space, and it feels like the Joe satellite that's sole purpose was to destroy the mass satellite. It sat there waiting to pull the trigger for long enough for all the Cobra people to teleport and get their bearings and then shoot it down. Like that whole scene took an eternity, and I felt like if they had just shot the satellite, this all would have been over.
And nothing happened. Like, there was nothing for any of that. Yeah. That was all a waste of time.
And I did do – did they just teleport Cobra guys into space? I did stop and ask myself that question.
Yeah. What are those – what happens next?
Oh,
what, are those guys, you know, like the do we what's the egress?
So are you sending a ship or no?
Oh no, that was it, huh? Oh, I'm glad I gave my life for this.
Jeez.
So, again, the wonderful so Destro called Cobra Commander Reptilian Popinjay a couple episodes ago. Now it's egotistical Peacock. He is the sauciest commander in the base.
He hates birds.
Cobra Commander's like the
it's a bird, right?
Probably. He's like the Cobra Commander's like the foppish king, an old medieval England who was like inbred and ineffectual, and he was really being run everything by the right hand man. Destro is just not even. There's no even pretense of respect with Destro.
At this point, I get the feeling that Destro isn't like. I feel like there is a. You know, like there's an equality in terms of their leadership, right? Like, whereas in the future episodes, Destro is purely under Cobra Commander, but this it seems like it's a shared attempt at leadership.
I was always confused about that as a kid because
clearly, it's in the theme song. It's Cobra and Destro.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but he's called Cobra Commander, which indicates, you know, like a level. And I remember as a kid just thinking, why is he taking this shit from him?
Right.
I mean, not that word.
In the comics, it was clear, right?
Yeah.
He was always conspiring with Baroness and Major Blood or Dr. Mindbender or Zartan.
Well, he was a third-party contractor.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. He's a weapons contractor, right?
Howard Stark.
Yeah. Yeah. in a very darker timeline.
So
depends on who you ask.
I had forgotten, because we talked about in the first time how, you know, Snake Eyes got the short shrift in the cartoon, but he really did have a lot to do in the last two episodes.
He did. And also he was... rescued by Cover Girl, who just, you know, is out at the perimeter in the most like inconvenient vehicle to take to go pick Snake Eyes up.
Rocket launching tank?
Yeah, the enormous rocket launching tank.
That's the Warthog.
Oh, by the way, also, when Snake Eyes collapses in the snow because of the radiation poisoning and after being attacked by the enormous
giant polar bear.
They can't draw animals.
The blind hermit finds him, and did you see when the blind hermit picks both him and Timber up and tucks them both under his arm and carries them to his dog sled?
Well, he was also pretty giant, I thought.
He was enormous,
Let's talk about his design that made no sense at all. Like, he had Ace Frehley eyes and a big white hair is that supposed to be blind?
He said he was blind. He couldn't see anything.
I know, but... It's weird.
So Zartan eyes, actually.
I did do a bit more of a deep dive onto the blind hermit. This is the only episode he appears in.
Okay.
So there you go.
That was as deep as the dive went.
Yeah, pretty much.
I will say I did misspeak. CoverGirl's vehicle is the Wolverine, not the Warthog.
The Warthog was the plane, right?
Yes. It was the A-10.
Took off from the ground.
Yeah,
vertically.
Yeah, same. Yeah, it's a real plane, like the A-10. Forget what it's called.
So speaking of Cover Girl, this is also her original design. She was, you know, her character is the former Cover Girl model, who's now Joe, and so she's got the long flowing supermodel
blonde
hair. And later on, she suddenly will sport a brunette suburban mom short haircut.
Right,
which is a strange
change. Which I prefer. We also got the G.I. Joe underwater vehicle.
Well, before they saw it was torpedo, they were very excited about a submarine in general.
Yes, yeah.
They were very excited about a submarine in general.
As if they'd never seen it. It's not exactly a shark, by the way.
No, it isn't, because they didn't name it, and it didn't have deep six. And,
right. And the shark looked like this one in here had the two yellow foils on the wing, and the shark just has the one fin in the middle. This looks to be a little wider than the shark. It definitely, you can see this is the beginnings of the shark. But I would like to go back to Torpedo's entrance, because I don't think that there has ever been like that submarine comes up and Torpedo comes out and those Joes lost it. Oh man. Torpedo. I love Torpedo. Good guy.
Again, I have to go back and correct myself, us. The G.I. Joe Warthog was an amphibious infantry fighting vehicle. It came with Sergeant Slaughter.
I want I want you to keep doing this throughout the episode.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I have to. Otherwise, they're going to come back. The A-10 Thunderbolt was the G.I. Joe plane that I was thinking of based on the real plane, the A-10.
So what I find interesting about Torpedo is if you compare – how would you describe his portrayal in this episode?
Hawaiian.
Right. But also he was, you know, like he was into it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, he was gung-ho. Semper Fi.
So Torpedo's card description on the back of his action figure was, Torpedo can be described as the consummate professional. You can always rely on him to do the job at the best of his ability, and that's it. Don't count on him to do any high-five or victory dance when the mission is done. Well, I feel like he was the first guy to high-five and victory dance.
He danced before the mission. Trail. He did during the mission.
Yeah. Well, Dan Thompson and Ron Friedman just went, this isn't going to work for us. And they had the freedom from where they were working. You know, Marvel Productions said, you do need to do what you need to do to make this the best, to make this the most entertaining.
So, to continue Torpedo, off mission, he's only preoccupied with his obsessions, namely perfecting his fighting skills and improving his demolitions gear. He is a strict vegetarian. He has the personality of a cold fish.
Maybe it was just a mistake.
No, I mean, you know, none of this shit matched up. The toys, the cartoon, the comics, it was all different. I did like, there was a little bit of a nod to the Scarlet Snake guy's relationship here, where she gets very excited to return. He returns and gives him a big hug, which is basically
Did she call him Snake?
She might have.
I think she did.
But that's never really done. Nothing happens in the cartoon with that. But that was like a little sly nod to the fact that they were closer than other characters.
Yeah. Writer Larry Hama gave gave him his file name after Steve Lealoha.
Yep.
Comic book artist. That's nice.
Great artist, yeah.
That's a good one.
So this is exciting. You know, now we have the yellow element tomorrow. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
We had green. We have green.
We've got the red crystals, the radioactive crystals.
Oh, it's yellow.
We have the blue heavy water, and yeah.
Which
they seem to have a pretty good supply of already, but I guess it's like toilet paper.
Did you see by when Snake Eyes brought the crystals before the canister booby trapped and gave, as Duke explained, what was it? It was paralyzing gas.
Yeah.
Did you see the robotic contraption the scientist used to put the crystals in the tube, like the arm that went out and then went down? Like, that was pretty cool.
But also no protection from the
radioactive whatsoever.
It was just like, 24 inches from Duke.
Radioactivity works different in that world.
We're not even touching
If you're blind, it can't even touch you.
Right. We're not even touching on the flashback to the captivity that Duke had in the headset that let him remember where he was, you know, the whole kind of being in captivity memory.
I feel like things happen in between the episodes, because in the last time on G.I. Joe part, they'd mentioned how they made the world leaders into slaves. So I thought that didn't happen on the screen.
No, I don't think it happened on the screen at all.
No, they teleported them in, and we just saw that's just economical storytelling, my friend. They're in they put them in the pits. You bring them there. What are you going to do? They're going to put them in the pits. I don't need to spend time explaining that.
So much wasted concrete. Like, that's a lot of really expensive build they did. I'm excited, though, to see how this all wraps up. And as long as this weird time of our lives continues, we'll get to the next.
Well, listen, there's two parts here. I mean, we still got two more episodes to go.
I know. Yeah. It's great.
They did upload more than just these, right?
Yes.
And do we make that clear? These are all on YouTube free of, I think they're free of ads.
Yeah, they're free of ads, yeah, except they do have the ad breaks.
They have the bumpers, which is exciting.
Nothing wrong with that.
But yeah, we link them all in our show notes. If you haven't seen the episode, you can find the link in our show notes. And miniseries number two, obviously we're not getting ahead of ourselves, is The Revenge of Cobra.
Oh, that's exciting. Episode one is in the Cobra's pit.
And I'm looking at the little thumbnails, and I see Zartan. I see Shipwreck. This is exciting.
We're scratching the surface of G.I. Joe right now. I mean, it's great to see Stalker and, you know, and the original OG costume Snake Eyes, and we get introduced to Timber and Blonde Cover Girl. But once we get into Zartan, Shipwreck, Dr. Mindbender, that's really
also.
Also, I did find this fascinating because, like, I talked about a couple weeks ago when we talked about the first episode. I vaguely remember these episodes. I couldn't recount the storyline for you based on my childhood memory because I do remember the later ones, but they really. really love to go to the well with the Joe and Cobra racing to collect things to build something.
We talked about that last week's episode with, Damien. Yeah. Yes, like there's like three miniseries all about this.
It's the same story. It's
We've been talking about this for years, and whenever it happens in a comic book, we're like, oh, that's the broadcast energy transmitter. And what we should have said was the mass device. That's something that we learned from this.
Yeah.
It turns out, by the way, that there are other people on YouTube talking about this.
No.
Yeah, I know. It's true. One of them has it like their screenshot is a picture of the G.I. Joe like DVD that they're talking about. And then a Yeti mic pointed the wrong way at the person. Just for those of you out there, the Yeti mic, which is a common podcaster and YouTuber mic, is not meant to be pointed at the person speaking. No one seems to know that, but,
but it looks so good when they do it.
It does. It looks great.
That's the problem with the Yeti microphone is that it looks better than it should.
That's true, but that's like trying to drink a can from the side.
So, Ron, are you going to stick around, or are you going to take your leave and return for the next G.I. Joe discussion?
I got some letters.
I'll stick around. Yeah, I can stick around. Hey, everyone's asleep here, so might as well.
All right, so that's G.I. Joe Corner. We will return to G.I. Joe Corner next exciting episode of iFanboy and G.I. Joe.
I love it.
In the meantime, as we told you last week, patreon.com/iFanboy, we hit our next stretch goal. And in fact, we hit it comfortably. It was pretty shocking to see. At the time of recording last week, we were exactly at the stretch goal. We were a little worried, but we comfortably passed it. And so that means we have begun the process of uploading old shows to YouTube, and we are prepping the next episode of the non-comics media podcast, the monthly episode. So you'll get that this month, and you'll get
what I enjoy about this stretch goal is that it puts me to work.
So yeah, you got to come in for the show.
I got to come do this. I got to come do the media explode. I thought I left, but now I'm back.
You have the hard drive of old shows, so it's all very Ron heavy. So let's. You know, it sounds crazy. I never thought I'd say it on the show itself, but the next stretch goal is the return of the quarterly barbecue video podcast. We never thought we'd actually have to worry about that. So
I'm rooting for 3/4 of that goal.
So go to patreon.com/iFanboy. You can go get lots of benefits there, and we appreciate that. Also, t-shirt store, iFanboy.threadless.com. We've told you before about our 7 previous designs, iFanboy logo, Herm, Pick of the Podcast, ratings, if one is Electro, GDAT. Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters, and our new design, Stay Home and Read Comics, which is fast becoming it's catching up to Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters as our most popular design.
Wow.
And as we said before, a portion of all the profits from the sales of this design will go to comic stores in need. We're still working out the strategy on that because there isn't like a central place. There's a one popular charity, but they're also doing bookstores. We want to make sure all the money goes to comic stores. So we're going to figure out how to do that once the dust settles on the sales of that design. But you can go check it out. It's a great design, if I can say so myself. iFanboy.threadless.com, and check that design out. And you can get it on other things besides t-shirts. And I got a notebook. It looks nice on that.
I'm seeing people post it on Twitter when they get it. They're posting pictures of it, and it's very cool to see it out in the wild. So if you have ordered it and you get it, throw a picture up on Twitter. Share the experience with everyone.
I have a
can they make it into the masks? I saw because Threadless does the masks too. So
do they really
that? Yeah.
Oh, so wow.
I'm sure we can, but like we should okay that.
We should authorize that design, yes.
That's a good idea.
All right, well, we'll work on that for next time. iFanboy.com/support. That's where you can help us out via PayPal directly if you feel like it. And we thank you, anyone who does that. iFanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can buy books that we talk about on Booksplode and a general link. And we thank everyone who helps the show. You know, tough economic times. If you can't help, that's totally fine. But if you can, we would appreciate it. And we thank you. And like we talked about with Patreon, you get lots of rewards, one of which is the patron pick, which obviously we talked about last week being a little bit on hiatus until there's stuff to pick. But the other thing is the patron powers. If you give it the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show. Josh, you're first.
Well, the Steve Smith projects an aura around him of, let's say, 6 feet. Mm-hmm. And in that 6 feet, you receive perfect broadband signal, highest possible bandwidth for whatever device it is you're holding. If you know you're on the LTE, you're on the 5G, or even if you're just in the house, just tunnel wide open, like full pipeline, you know, you're getting, if you're on fiber, you know, it's just stupid.
So it's not area specific. It's not like the best in that region. It's just the best possible.
Best possible for the specific device and hardware that you're working with, which, you know, with most modern stuff, that's pretty good.
That's a handy power to have.
You know, if you happen to be at your grandma's and there's still like a dial up there, like you're getting the full 14.4 baud.
All right.
That joke was so old that I was like, I don't even know if I'm saying this right.
And you went for it.
Yeah.
Because you got the fact it. You is, got it. 14.4. That worked.
Most people don't know at this point.
Swimpthung is the name that's on this script. Swimpthung is the next patron. And what Swimpthung can do is activate his or her power, and they grow an 80s power rock mullet, and then they can sing any 80s power rock pop song.
Wow.
So they sort of become an 80s, not like hair metal. I'm thinking more like The Outfield or Toto, you know, that kind of thing.
Wow.
It was The Outfield that got me.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I mean, that's strong. Like, does Rick Springfield fall under that?
Yeah, Starship, Rick Springfield. Okay. Like, you know, okay. you get that. You turn it. Swimpthung turns into an 80s power pop singer.
Lover boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Beautiful singing like voice.
Sure.
Can't get rid of the mullet, though. Yeah.
No. Well, that's part and parcel, my friend.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and give $5 high level, get your own power on the show. Thank you to Steve and Swimpthung.
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 All right, let's do some emails. Let's start with the first one on here from Dr. Robert M. Again, I'm always amazed when any sort of adult professional, certainly a doctor, is spending their time listening to us. And Christ, I hope that helps. Thank you. He's been thinking about this question since I've been distancing, which has been over a month. It's asked backwards, but my work week has greatly increased, and I actually find myself spending more time with comics. I'm a geriatric physician trying to keep my head down at work. Yeah. And when I'm home, all I want is music and something to look at and lose myself in. Examples of what I consider time well spent is zoning out on the art of James Stokoe, Seth Fisher, Raphael Grandpa. Those are three excellent examples, by the way, and I think I get your taste. Do you have any aspects of comics that you can focus on and lose yourself in? Any recommendations, not just based on my preferences? My friend suggested reading up on classic Fantastic Four, focusing solely on the art. That's the question.
Interesting.
I wouldn't focus solely on the art because
I mean, yeah, you're missing half the story there.
Yeah, I mean, after we read those Kirby things, boys, a lot of those Kirby and Lee Fantastic Fours that we talked about, those all those Galactus stories. There's a lot of great stuff in the writing too. It was super fun.
What can you lose yourself in? That's tougher for us, I think.
I would, if I could recommend something from my fine employer back in the day, if you never read the original Secret Wars or Secret Wars 2, I feel like that's a great little get lost in kind of moment.
I mean, for me, the answer would be, you know, we were talking about a Garth Ennis book at the beginning of this. Any of those really wonderful 60 to 75 issue Vertigo runs from the end of the 90s, the first half of the 2000s. You know, there's Preacher, Hellblazer, Lucifer,
Transmet,
Sandman, Transmetropolitan. Mm-hmm. A lot of those. And those are the kind where they're big enough that you can just dig in and really get going. Those, I mean, I'm sure there are others, but I always, when I think of Preacher, I just think of getting lost and just reading and not wanting to stop. And, you know, those 9 books to go through or 60 issues or whatever. Transmet's the same way.
What reminds me of that, and honestly, you know, the early 2000s was just a freaking awesome time for, like, cause I was as you're saying that, I was like, oh man, now's the time for you to dive into Sin City.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like all the volumes of Sin City and piecing the timeline together and all that fun stuff. Like that stuff was so good at that time.
I mean, there's dozens of Hellboy you could do that with. You could go read, you know, Strangers in Paradise in the beginning. You could read, you know, all of those sort of long series that, you know, went on for 5, 6, 7 years or something like that. I had a friend who I did, like a work guy who I didn't even know was super into comics or anything. And he said, oh, I loved Lucifer. Like, I was super into that. Like, it's because it's like reading a novel. That's that to me, that's my favorite thing to do. If you really want to lose yourself, is getting into a novel, be it fiction or nonfiction. But just, you know, you got a long runway in front of you. And those are the comics that do that for me, too.
Yeah, it's I think it's slightly more difficult for maybe just me. But, you know, it's hard not to read something and think about how I'm going to turn it into content for the show. But I think you guys are right. The longer, the better. Like, I have the 2 through 5 volumes of Mark Waid's Flash. And that's something I'm not worried about talking about in the show. And it's long enough where I can really just sort of get into the momentum of it. Or something I've read a lot, like New Frontier. You know, like, I've read it so much, I'm not worried about how I'm going to talk about it. And I can just sort of, that's art. I can just sort of lose myself in the storytelling of it.
I mean, yeah. If you've only read Watchmen once or twice, I mean, I know it's like an obvious answer, but when you read Watchmen a bunch of times, each time you're like, holy cow, you do that, then watch the show, go, you know, like, make those connections if you've got the time. I feel like that's kind of grim and heavy, but it's still so good and so entertaining.
So hopefully that there's some stuff there, Dr. Robert.
I feel like he's an acid dealer, I think.
And
he can get you your weed card.
So yeah.
Hey, bud, what's the problem?
You know, hope you're hanging in there. Geriatric physicians is tough right now, so hang in there. Let's do Wes from Minnesota, who says, for the past 2 weeks, I've been thinking about great artists who are also good writers, not just okay, but good. And the list comes up pretty short. Other than classic creators, Frank Miller, Darwin Cook, Jeff Smith, I can't think of any modern examples other than Gabriel Hardman. Are there any that you can think of? Also, I just wanted to thank you for the show. It's a respite from all the shit that's going on. It helps me get a break from the insanity. I hope it gives you guys a break from the chaos as well. It does.
It does. Absolutely. It's a good question. I think my first instinct was there's a bunch of guys who are kind of primarily known as writers, but were artists.
We used to get this question a lot. Yeah. I don't know if you guys remember, like 10 years ago, it was a lot of like, why are these art? You know, who are these artists think they can write? And it's like, that's like the standard. That's like the standard comment. I mean, comic books usually, at least in the beginning, were made by people who wrote and drew, and Carl Barks and Will Eisner. And, I mean, it's not unusual. What I'm saying is it's not unusual for having writers who draw and artists who write. It's just that's...
Well, what I think is interesting is that, like, it's so easy to, you know, kind of talk about Frank Miller or talk about, you know, the ones that are kind of established. But, like, I feel like in the last decade, there was a whole nother generation that came up. And you've got Jeff Lemire, you've got Jason Latour, you've got Scotty Young, right? You've got these guys who started off as artists who are now, you know, Lemire is probably better, has more work out as a writer than he does as an artist.
I still think because we first came up upon him with Essex County, you know, like I still think of that. Oh, that's him. And Sweet Tooth, like that's writing and drawing. I'm having a hard time coming up. I know they exist in superhero stuff, but you mentioned Jeff Smith, and I think Judd Winnick to me is a guy who, you know, he's doing.
That's what I was going to say.
All ages books, the Hilo books. Hilo books are so good. I read them all with my kids.
Well, I think, but what's funny is that I think of Judd, but that's different though, because not that it's different, but Judd's writing, like, I feel like Judd is a creator. Judd is he's writing and drawing that stuff. He is truly in the same classification now as Charles Schulz and other great cartoonists. Like, he's
Brandon
a cartoonist.
Tegelmeyer, yeah,
exactly. You know, I also kind of think for, you know, for those of you who are enjoying, you know, the stuff for Marvel and then later on an Image, but Rick Remender.
You know,
is an artist. Like, if you follow him on Instagram, he posts his sketches and doodles all the time, and he started off as an artist. So,
and there are guys that you don't think of, like Jeff Parker is an artist. Bill Willingham is an artist. I always think my first thing here was Phil Hester, who's a great writer and a great artist, you know. Yeah.
But I wonder if
separately.
He's asking for people who are currently doing it, because you'll get less of that, especially in mainstream work, because, you know, a guy like Scotty can write 3 books instead of drawing just the one.
Well, I mean, you really liked Sean Murphy's.
Yeah, Sean Murphy's Batman stuff was terrific. He's, you know, a writer and an artist. It's not so unusual, although it's more unusual in your Marvel and DC world, just from the logistics of making those books and everything.
I mean, John Byrne. You didn't mention John Byrne.
Yeah, well, for a reason.
No, but like
he wrote great books. And
up to a certain point, though, I don't know when that cutoff is. I think it was somewhere around Spider-Man
in the
90s, Chapter 1.
The 90s.
Yeah, but prior to that, pretty much any John Byrne art you saw was golden. Like, it was just like every time I see it, it's so good.
I was reviewing a video that we're doing at work, and there was some John Byrne She-Hulk art that came up in the video work, and I just paused. I'm like, oh man, that looks so good.
I will see that cover. You know, the pink cover with her, yep, just till the day I die. Like, gorgeous.
Yep. You mentioned, Josh, you got sort of cut off Walt Simonson. You had Dan Jurgens in the 90s wrote and drew Superman. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not totally unusual.
Keith Giffen. I mean, yeah, he mostly did layouts and stuff.
He was doing vaudeville.
Phil Jimenez.
Yeah. Yep.
Phil Jimenez is a great writer and artist.
The Hernandez.
Terry Moore is still doing great books.
Terry Moore.
Yeah. He said
modern guys, and that is a little trickier. I mean, Bendis, for Christ's sakes.
No, Bendis wasn't a great artist, but he made
comics that worked. I mean, it wasn't like you read those comics and go, these are junk. I can't even look at it. He figured out a way.
Yeah.
Fuck. Alan Moore was an artist. He was a cartoonist. Yeah. Like, he did stuff that is not terrible, and these aren't modern guys, but I just think it's interesting. Well, like,
Grant Morrison,
so pervasive.
Drew also, like, I think it's a different category of people who could draw a little and wrote really well, as opposed to guys like, you know, Walt Simonson, who could really write well and also draw really well.
What's interesting is the folks who came, you know, and they wanted to be artists, and then they kind of realized, like, oh, I'm not in that class. Donny Cates is one of those. Kelly Thompson's one of those, you know, and they just sort of focused on writing. But, you know, that started off with that in mind. Mm-hmm. Sure, a lot of writers like that, but then quit at various points along the way.
So there you go. Those are a bunch of people. I'm sure there's more. I'm sure we'll hear about them.
Yeah. Post them wherever it is you're posting things. There's a lot of options now.
Write in with your recommendations.
Or just put them on Twitter. Put them in the comments. Yeah. It's fine.
ContractGuyFanboy.com. That's so you can write in, get on the show. And, it was funny. I'm going through the old episodes. And we used to do like 4 to 5 emails a show and then 4 to 5 voicemails.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that was before the patron stuff.
I'm talking about like 2007.
We
would talk about like 5 comics and then in like 20 minutes, and then we spend the next 40 minutes doing emails and voicemails. It was a very different format.
We talk a lot more about specific things. Yeah, that too, but also just like our answers are longer
there's more comics to talk about now, for better or for worse.
And to be honest, we know more.
True. Well, you know, Connor does.
Yeah. You know,
miss me, Josh?
Yes, and I don't know why. That's the worst part.
So let's do all the plugs. So we have a media splow coming soon, which I just talked about. The three of us are going to talk about stuff in media, and if all of the segments happen that we've been talking about, the show is going to be 4 hours long. Josh is going to have a talk splode for you soon. As we talked about last week, there was a technical glitch in his recording, so he's going to be redoing that at some point. And
soon, next in the next week or two.
Do we want to tease the Booksplode book for
I don't
May?
Remember what it was, so you go for it.
You picked it.
Wait, did I? You good? Tell me, because I don't remember.
All right, for the Booksplode for May is going to be Jack Kirby's New Gods.
Yes.
Cool.
From DC.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
It's on Comixology. If you want to get it, it's 424 pages, so it'll probably be the end of May.
It's a good thing you reminded me. I better get started. I got to go, guys.
So you can find all those shows over at fanboy.com. That's where you can find what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. And that's who knows what the pick's going to be every week. We'll find out. It's going to be a fun little game. You can also find out by liking facebook.com/fanboy, following at fanboy on Twitter, at fanboy comics on Instagram. And individually, we are at CS Kilpatrick on Instagram, at JA Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, and at RonXO on Twitter and Instagram.
If you like the show, any show, whatever the podcast is, and there's a way for you to either give it a rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening, or talk about it, not just our show, any of them that are important to you right now is probably the most important time to be doing that. Not so much for yourselves, but so that everybody can discover as much of the stuff that helps them get through everything that's going on as possible. And also, just as people who are making the show, I've said this before and I will keep telling you, everybody who tells us that we are making their day in any part better, you know, it's the best. I love hearing it. I'm not like, yeah, well, of course you do. Like, I'm genuinely touched every time I hear it. And it really makes me feel like I'm doing something valuable with my time, because this feels super invaluable quite often. But no, you know, let people know, you know, sort of what the stuff they're doing is that means a lot to you, is helping you get through this. I'm sure that makes everybody feel pretty good. And thank you to all the people who have been doing that so much. So that's how that works. That's all I have.
Yeah.
Connor.
I'm done.
All right. You're done.
Thanks, Ron.
You're done.
My pleasure.
You going to come back and talk about episode 4?
Hell's yeah.
Or was that 4? I can't even remember anymore.
This is 3. This is 3. Yeah. 4 is next. Yeah, no, I'm on the G.I. Joe train. You got it.
Duel in the Devil's Cauldron.
As long as those worms aren't on it, I'm fine.
God, those are scary worms. All right, until next time. Thanks, Ron. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
Thank you.
Wash your hands.
Yeah, wash them. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.